Should you get paid more for going into the office, or looked at another way, paid less for doing it from home? I'm David Brancaccio. Many employees at the accountants PricewaterhouseCoopers have now been told they can work remotely forever. But if the remote location is in a lower cost area, the remote workers could be paid less than those who come in. Google's Alphabet also factors in location, with remote workers potentially getting less. Paying by geography is not new. Parking alone in New York City can run $560 a month, but it's usually where the office is that's the determining factor, not where your house is or how you commute. But the shift to remote work and the challenge of if, when, and how to reopen offices casts all of this into a new light. Let's turn to Peter Capelli. He's a professor of management and director of the Wharton School's Center for Human Resources. Professor, good morning.
Yeah, good morning.
There's so many parts to this, right? It's not just living in a cheaper area, but there are also the costs to employees who do come in to the office, commuting costs, nicer clothes, extra haircuts. Does it make sense that companies might pay people differently depending on where it's all happening?
You know, historically, if you looked at pay differences by location, they happened when the employer was deciding where you were going to work. So the reason that you got paid more in the New York City office is they were requiring you to be in the New York City office. This is the first time we've ever heard of employers trying to pay people differently based on where the employee decides to move. If you think about it, for example, in Silicon Valley, you always have people there living in Palo Alto, the most expensive part of the valley, and you have people commuting in from an hour or so away, where it's much cheaper. I've never heard of them saying we're going to pay the people commuting in less simply because they've lived in a cheaper area.
That's interesting. So this does raise issues. Some employees may feel it's unfair, but on the other hand, you can imagine employers who would like their employees to start coming back to the office, not to get the impression that working from home is subsidized because it's cheaper if you don't come in.
Yeah, for the employers, it's way cheaper, honestly, if you are remote, because they're going to take your office back, right? So they're shrinking their commercial real estate footprint and the parking that goes with that and the discounted food and all that sort of stuff. You know, within a typical employer, there's always a debate about whether we should worry about fairness or whether we should just try to pay as little as possible. And this is an example of the pay as little as possible team winning.
I see. And do you think it could face some pushback by employees who say, look, I'm just as productive as the person who comes in. I can demonstrate that because it's that type of job. Why should I get paid less?
Well, I think that's a very persuasive argument. And in this context, we don't hear anybody saying, any employer saying, oh, by the way, if you move to a more expensive place, we're going to pay you more. It's entirely about paying you less. And you might try this out if you work for one of these companies. Tell them you're going to move to Hong Kong, which has much higher cost of living than Silicon Valley does, and see if they say, okay, we'll raise your pay. I'm betting they're not going to say that.
Maybe the wrong moment in history to make these changes in pay, because there's a labor shortage and employees have more bargaining power.
Well, I think that's a great point, because some people are speculating that the reason employers are doing this is that at least some of them don't really want you to work remotely, but they want to offer you the opportunity to do it. So, you know, the amount that they're charging you effectively to work remotely seems to be going up. At least conversations I've heard say sometimes it's up to 20% pay cut. And, you know, once you see how much of a pay cut you're going to have to take to move back home to be close to your parents someplace farther away, right? You say, well, you know, that's too much. I can't do it.
Peter Capelli is a professor of management and director of the Wharton School's Center for Human Resources. His most recent book is The Future of the Office, Work from Home, Remote Work, and the Hard Choices We All Face. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All of our coverage of The Big Return is at the Marketplace homepage. Anyone going to work anywhere in Italy starting today has to show their health pass, either proof of vaccination or a negative COVID test within 48 hours. No pass, no entry. Proibito. Employees and their employers risk a fine if they don't comply. The measures are a first for Europe and some of the strictest in the world. The BBC's Mike Sanders has more.
Italy's Green Pass is already mandatory in many walks of life. Teachers need them, and they're required on trains, in restaurants and bars, cinemas, museums, and football stadiums. But more than 10% of the 23 million strong workforce are thought to be unvaccinated. Those who refuse the jab can still get a Green Pass on their mobiles if they test themselves regularly at their own expense. Employees can be suspended without pay for turning up without one, and employers fined heavily for not checking. Protests against the pass last Saturday degenerated into a full-blown riot at Italy's Trade Union Confederation building.
Mike Sanders is with our editorial partner, the BBC. Now a read on the economy with news today that retail sales went up 0.7% in September. Let's welcome Drew Mattis, Managing Director and Chief Market Strategist at MetLife Investment Management.
Hi, how are you, David?
Somewhat exuberant consumers, it appears, for September, even though it's kind of hard to find stuff we want to buy these days with the bottlenecks.
Yeah, and maybe people are deciding that if they can't find, you know, the thing that they want to buy, they're just going to buy something else.
It's an interesting time. I mean, there was some strength in these numbers.
Certainly, people are beginning to, you know, become a little more comfortable engaging in the economy despite the virus. People who want to find work have a pretty easy time finding work. And so, you know, people who have jobs are feeling pretty confident that they can go out and spend the money because, you know, they expect that they'll get more opportunity to earn money later.
Drew Mattis, Chief Market Strategist at MetLife Investment Management. Thank you so much.
Thank you, David.
We're also covering 10,000 workers at John Deere on strike now after the employees rejected a contract negotiated with the company by their union. Safety, pay, and the structure of pensions are at issue at a time when workers feel they're in a stronger bargaining position during a widespread shortage of people to hire. That coverage is in the Marketplace Morning Report podcast if you miss it on the air. I'm David Brancaccio. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.